Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Orthodox Nationalist. I am Matthew Raphael Johnson, and this show is about the Russian Orthodox Church and its relationship to the rest of the world and the rest of society. Now, today, we are going to cover a very famous bishop, some would say an infamous bishop, of the 20th century, Metropolitan Vitali, who was the head of the Russian Orthodox Church outside of Russia until 2001. And some nastiness happened, we'll talk about here in a minute. He had to form his own group, and he died almost 100 a few years later. His writings, his theology has not been dealt with to any great extent. The Synod outside of Russia, this is the, for those who don't know, these are the clerics who were part of the White Army when they evacuated through the Crimea and then went through Constantinople and then created themselves, you know, institutionally in Yugoslavia and then eventually came to America, where they have their headquarters to this day on 91st Street in Manhattan. And they've been there for many decades. And that became the voice of the Russian Orthodox Church, and it became the voice of the monarchist movement. The Synod abroad, Synod outside Russia, have different names. Synod exile, stuff like that. Basically the same idea that Holy Russia has been exiled and has taken up its abode in different parts of the world, and that one day it will be able to return, because the communist system, by its very definition, can't last. It was really the conscience of the Orthodox Church. It brought the old ways and the old tradition from the Third Rome wherever it went. And up until recently, it maintained the tradition of the best of 19th century Russian theology, this explosion that occurred once the Petrine era was over, and there was some reform to remove the extremely non-anti-Orthodox purges that had occurred in the 18th century, and the church was able to rebuild itself. Finally, you had an explosion of Orthodox thinking that most so-called theologians in the West don't know the first thing about. Unfortunately, many Orthodox people don't know anything about. 99.9% of this has not been translated, and there's good reason for that. Well, one reason, of course, is that 100% of them say that communism was Jewish. 100% of them. There is no dissent there. That it was an ethnic movement. There is no question. The people who suffered under it all say the same thing. And these could be monarchists. These could be more liberal types. They all say the same thing. The Russian Orthodox Church outside of Russia has held the torch about the Jews as Antichrist. William Pierce, of all people, who was no friend of Christian, said there's only two groups in the world, Christian people that he respected. The first is the Romanian Orthodox Church. The second is the Russian Orthodox Church abroad. And this is for that this very reason. They maintain the flame for the handful of people who had the brains to come to understand what they were talking about. The language of the Third Rome was completely deaf. Whether they spoke English or Russian, they were still deaf to it. No one understood it. There wasn't the vocabulary even to express it. But it had many hundreds of thousands of converts throughout Europe, Asia, and America. The exile movement went in two directions. It went, as I said, first through Yugoslavia and out from England and to America. And the other one was through northern China prior to the fall of nationalist China, thanks to the U.S. Leaning towards the Reds, as they usually did. And then they went through the Philippines and eventually end up in San Francisco. where, again, one of the biggest Russian hubs outside of Russia. Vitaly was a successor of the canonized Metropolitan Philaret, who died in 1985. And he was Metropolitan at a very difficult time. Well, it's always a difficult time, but in this particular case, the time where the Soviet Union had collapsed. Solzhenitsyn had predicted it, but he was the only one. The Orthodox Church's response was abysmal. It was disastrous. Now, in Russia proper, of course, there was a massive explosion in church building, etc. Souls were being saved there, regardless of the canonicity of some of this stuff. There's an explosion. To be Orthodox in Russia is to be a rebel, because atheism was enforced. Russian Orthodoxy is rebellion against the world, rebellion against materialism, rebellion against the West. It is rebellion, period. Russia shows itself to be the leader of the forces against the New World Order. The Orthodox Church, by definition, is included along with that. However, the exile groups, the catacomb groups, those who stayed in the USSR but stayed underground, did nothing but fight. There was no love. There was no respect. All they cared about was where bishops should go. The people were completely ignored, and they fought and they destroyed each other over turf wars. So, yeah, the gulags didn't get him, but their own egotism did. Well, that aside, the church is much, much more than bishops and even the people who are in it at any given time. You know, it's the right faith given to the wrong people. You know, I'm proof of that. No one's a bigger jerk than I am, but I've been given the truth for some reason. But Metropolitan Vitaly has a bad reputation. Many people who knew him said he was very difficult, he was very harsh, he was very autocratic. I don't know if that's true, but that was his reputation. But he's known especially for one thing. 2001, the Synod in Exile decided to return to the Russian Orthodox Church in Moscow. There was a problem with that. The problem is that the so-called Moscow Patriarchate was something that the Communist Party put together in 1944 to give a semblance of religious freedom. Not so much for the war effort, that was already done, but to Western observers. The purges were over. It was time for a more humane approach. So instead of killing 100,000 a month, they killed 75,000 a month. With banner headlines in the West about how the Soviet Union is reforming. Those groups now came up from underground. The relations between the exile group on the one hand and the groups that went underground on the other were very bad. You would think that those underground would be ecstatic that the gulag isn't staring them in the face anymore. No, absolutely not. Their behavior was abysmal. Now again, bishops were not the church. It's a terrible error to talk about the history of this era and talk only about bishops. There's nothing special about bishops, except they're usually a major pain in the ass. That's what's special about them, with a few exceptions. They've caused all these troubles. The people on the ground did not cause these troubles. The monks didn't, priests didn't, bishops did. And it's not about income. That never changed. It's not about power. That didn't change. It's about righteousness. Who has a right to be where they are? You know, income and power, that stuff doesn't change no matter who they're with. That's irrelevant. It's about who is righteous, who gets to claim to be a martyr, who doesn't. You would think that these people would be vibrating with ecstasy that the Soviet Union had fallen. Anything was true. Now, of course, at the same time, Russia had become actually worse than it was under the Soviets. I've explained this many, many times. The 1990s in Russia killed more Russians than Stalin did. I'm not going to go through this again. My website, rushjournal.org, has everything on here. But there wasn't reason to celebrate. Stalin failed to break the Russian spirit. Western liberalism almost did. Now, Metropolitan Vitaly was a leader of the faction that decided not to join with the Soviet-created Moscow Patriarchate. I am not going to say that there is so-called grace in a jurisdiction. It's a ridiculous way to state things. Jurisdictions don't have grace. That's not how it works. That's the heresy of created grace. That's not how it works. They're organizations of convenience only. And even that, they're not very convenient. There are plenty of good people, and the Holy Spirit operates in all Orthodox peoples. Jurisdictions have nothing to do with it. That's idolatry. It's communities, families, institutions. That's what matters. Bishops don't you know, create grace and throw it at someone that they want. That's not how it works. So whether the grace in the Moscow Patriarchate or not is a nonsensical question. It doesn't make sense. Grace isn't a jurisdiction to have or to give. But because it was so tainted by connection and collaboration with the Soviet Union, a lot of Russian nationalists refused to have anything to do with it. It was the last remaining institution of the Soviet era. And that's true. You did have Christian people there. You did have very good people there who suffered. But under the Soviet Union, maybe they can do some good. You cannot condemn the entire organization. That's absurd. Bishops do not represent the organization. And organizations don't matter anyway. The community, the organism does. Wherever the Orthodox faith is being practiced, the Holy Spirit, by definition, has to be there because the faith can't function without the Spirit. That's a very simple idea. Bishops may or may not have anything to do with that. Whether or not God grants sacramental grace to a priest who is given supply jurisdiction is another matter. And I'm going to say one more thing. I said it before. Condemning Sergius is an outrage. Metropolitan Sergius, who signed the Declaration of Loyalty to the USSR in the 1920s, is condemned as a traitor. And it was a terrible thing that he did. He essentially legitimized the destruction of the church. And he did say, as it was going on, that it wasn't going on. He was a liar. And yet, if he didn't do that, he would die an agonizing death in the gulag. And they also said that most of his priests would too, in their families. So play along, and maybe they'll live. Now, what would you do? I'm sorry, these suburban people who just discovered the TOC yesterday would be waving their hammer and sickle flag, what they'd be doing. Do not condemn Sergius from a position of comfort in America. He signed that declaration because his thousands of families would be butchered if he didn't. Yeah, they were butchered anyway, but he didn't know that. No judging him. How would you behave under those circumstances, knowing what would happen to you in the gulag? And to your family, everyone who knew you, and people who sort of knew you. You're condemning, you getting caught is condemning thousands of people to death. What would you do? So no condemning. Now, objectively speaking, what he did was wrong. But you don't condemn Sergius for that. And I was kicked out of the Milan Synod because there was a slight inconvenience that maybe someone may say that I'm some sort of a racist or anti-Semite. That was sufficient. You know, that's how Americans operate. The tiniest little thing that someone may call him a name on the internet, and that's it, I'm gone. And they have the nerve to condemn Sergius, who was told if he didn't sign this thing, thousands would be butchered. Anyway, that aside, still, that was the foundation of the Moscow Patriarchate that still exists today. Vitaly headed the faction that rejected them. Most of the Synod abroad it was about probably less than half went along with the Moscow Patriarchate. At the time, I was in favor of it. I was in favor of it because it was a very good political idea, and it was. It was a terrible religious idea. And then it dawned on me. The heresy that's involved here is called Sergianism, named after Patriarch Sergius. No one has seemed to be able to identify this heresy. I've heard maybe 1,000 definitions over the last 20 years. When Sergius signed that Declaration of Loyalty, he then lent his name to a heresy that vaguely refers to somebody who would collaborate with those who seek our destruction. What would that mean for the U.S. then? Churchianism, then, is a word thrown around with no understanding. It does not mean that a cleric who receives his orders from state power is illegitimate. If that were the case, there'd be no legitimate clerics in 18th century, 19th century Russia. So that's not true. However, it is also true that atheists and people who wanted to destroy the church were given veto power over who ran it. It was a very small organization, just enough to let the Anglicans know that, yes, there's religious freedom here. Essentially, the Moscow Patriarchate in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, it was a branch of the World Council of Churches. The entire purpose of that Moscow Patriarchate was to give the Communist Party a voice in this internationalist body and to say to the world there's all kinds of freedom of speech here in the USSR. That's its purpose. I'll repeat, though, there are many, many good Christian people in that group. The group doesn't define their existence. Oh, these bishops were intensely corrupt. No doubt. But that has nothing to do with anything. People are not damned because their bishops are idiots. If that was the case, no one would be saved. What is Sergianism? The heresy named after Patriarch Sergius. It's the worship of the letter of the law against the spirit. To say that, well, we've had a proper canonical organization, therefore we're legitimate, is false. The faith wasn't there. The context wasn't there. To see the organization over the organism is what's condemned. The organization is meaningless. The Synod of Bishops in and of itself is useless. The truth manifested there is the only thing of value. And that becomes less and less as time goes on. It's about choosing respectability over the truth. And it's true, to be Orthodox in the USSR, you had to support this state-run, you know, fraudulent institution or risk arrest and death underground for the rest of your life. Again, no one's condemning anybody here. We have never been in that situation, although we might one day. But the heresy of Sergianism meant that you chose the Patriarchate because it was easier. I want to get a promotion at the factory, so I better make sure that I'm one of those guys. It condemns people who have made compromises with the regime to be socially accepted. Usually, almost always, that's a negative thing. You cannot be socially accepted in America and be Christian, period. You can't. For the same reason that Stalin can't create his own Orthodox Church. Even more fundamentally, Sergianism is about the belief that the appearance is the same as the object. So if we have glittering domes and beautiful icons, therefore the faith is there. That is not the case. It's also a heresy that condemns, as Vitali will himself, the idea that the church equals bishops. That's how this church was run. It was a Communist Party created organization. All of its leadership was vetted by the KGB, and before that, Stalin's group, the NKVD, and Yagpu. It has nothing about the ordinary person, of which there were very few. But the Moscow Patriarchate referred to the Patriarch and those under him. That's it. It was an organization, rigid and isolated. It's somebody who takes words at their face value, not understanding their meaning. Someone who takes the image as real. That's what Sergianism is. It was this idea that we know who created that organization, but again, we have a promotion coming up at the factory, and I need to join it, or at least not be associated with those other people, because I might get fired. The very same people who got rid of me are the same people who would condemn the people who joined the MP back then. This outrageous. It's the exact same thing is happening here. We're condemned because people are afraid of the Jews. I've lost two university jobs because of this. I'm still here. You didn't beat me. The Soviet Union tried to destroy the Orthodox faith, and now there's millions throughout the world. The Jews lost there too. Surgeonism is the belief that law is actual words on paper, and it's about power. That canon laws are laws in the sense that a penal code is a law. It's this positivist worship of the organization. That's what surgeonism is. It's not even necessarily saying that we could work with the Communist Party because we have no choice. That wasn't it. These people were actively supporting it. And the World Council of Churches, which the Communist Party made a very, very big priority for. No, it was the fact that membership in the organization was all that mattered. If you were outside of it, you were condemned by that fact alone. And they engaged and they assisted the security services in hunting down dissident clergy. Now, it's true that many in that organization have apologized for their role in that. That the New Martyrs, including the royal family, was canonized by the same organization. And they've made it clear that we are a part of those who died here. It's very vague. You can't expect too much out of them. But it is saying something. You can't get too excited about that kind of thing. I said last time, this is the same. They also said in 1971 that we were wrong about condemning the old believers. Sorry, guys. So that the thousands of deaths, the ripping of Russian society apart, two civil wars based on it, whether it be Pugachev and Razin, splitting the country in two, millions of deaths, destruction of Russian social space, the ripping apart of the church. Sorry, guys, we were wrong. Now, that should tell you how you should take, sins of bishops. And take them with a grain of salt. They're politicians most of the time. They're always wrong. As I said before, especially in modern age, they seem to be always wrong. In 1776, the Kolevatios Fathers, a very well-respected group of Greek saints on Mount Athos, were anathematized by the Patriarch of Constantinople. Now, no one took them seriously at the time. It was just, Greek and Jewish businessmen, who ran it. They were buying and selling anathemas, on a regular basis. There was a full bond market based on that. What we call it, a bond market style of selling paper. No one paid any attention to it. Those guys had to leave Athos because that was the Patriarch's property. But they continued to function as priests and everything else. They rolled their eyes and found another place to live. They were then excommunicated the same year. Of course, they're saints today. Again, so, when this stuff happens, you need to find, not whether bishops say anything. That is certainly no guarantee of truth. Metropolitan Vitali makes a big deal about this. In his attacks on the Moscow Patriarchate, that's one of the major prongs that he brings up again and again. All they care about are bishops as rulers, as oligarchs. The truth doesn't matter. The faith doesn't matter. It's the letter of the law. That's what makes you Orthodox. You have Orthodox people today, converts, who will tell you that to be canonical, I think by that they mean to be kind of regularized, to be recognized, again, which has no foundation in Orthodox history. You have to be in communion with the Orthodox Pope, Patriarch of Constantinople. You have clergy, you have bishops saying this today. This is what they think canonicity is. This is what surgeonism condemns. As if something is as banal as recognition or signatures on a page has anything to do with following the life of Christ and carrying a cross. If you're not in communion with Constantinople, you're not in the Orthodox Church. There are people who are professors at the major theological schools in America who will tell you that. That's how far away they are from the tradition. But this is what was condemned when the Synod in Exile condemned Sergianism. So when Vitale came out against the drive for the exile group to join the Patriarchate in Moscow, he said one of their biggest problems in an aspect of Sergianism is that bishops are the church. They're not. That somehow they are these oracles. Something is true because the bishops say it. Now, that might be true in very certain circumstances in the Roman church, which always gets funky, how to tell an infallible statement prior to the standard procedure of Vatican I. That becomes very foggy. It's a very, very weak point in Roman theology. You have it, so you don't even have it in Rome. You have it just occasionally in Rome. But you don't have it at all in Orthodoxy. Because a local synod, a group of bishops say that something is wrong, given their history and given the disaster of the church since the fall of the monarchy, take that with a grain of salt. Understand what their mentality is. Why are they saying this? Is it political? Are they under pressure? Do they even know what they're talking about? There are too many times where a synod of bishops has condemned something that they didn't understand. Peter the Great, who was an open worshiper of Dionysius and Prometheus, Satan, forced the purged synod, again, which is a surging operation in the definition of the term we use today, to anathematize the Ukrainian hetman Mazepa. The man had done nothing wrong. Mazepa, of course, was a great man. He recognized what Peter was. He knew that Peter had no understanding of and respect of human life. And he did rape Ukraine, actually literally in a few areas, through the sexual appetites. But that was manifest in how he treated the country as a whole. He sent millions to their deaths for the sake of a couple of square feet against Sweden. Mazepa said, I will not put my country at his feet because he will destroy it. And he did. Mazepa was condemned. Well, for no good reason, just because Peter said so. And to this day, certain parishes in Russia, the Moscow Patriarchate, will say anathema to Mazepa. Because the Satanist said it was okay. It's what you should do. Mazepa did nothing wrong. Peter the Great was not an Orthodox monarch. There was no Orthodox Tsar at the time. The Third Rome had fallen temporarily. There was no canonical bishops really in Russia at the time either, which is easy enough to prove. Mazepa was absolutely correct. And his canonical line of bishops came from Jerusalem. So even they agreed with that idea that it had fallen by that point. So local synods are often wrong. These aren't these, you know, whether the bishops say X, I say, well, so what? This was a big argument that Vitale used against those who wanted to join this organization. And it's true, it was growing by leaps and bounds, starting in 1985 or so. And there's nothing wrong with that. There are many Orthodox people there. There are many good monks and good parishes there. I don't care what the bishops do. God's not going to abandon millions of people because of a couple of bad bishops. That's absurd. But that is precisely part of the Sergianist mentality that sees the church life as an organization, as a pecking order. It's outrageous. Metropolitan Vitale, though, he had a lot more to say than that. Because, let me briefly tell you what happened. The details of this are, you kind of had to be there. And different witnesses say different things. So because of that, it's subjective, and so we can't make any kind of canonical claims based on it. What we know is that Vitale had retired in 2000. However, soon afterwards, he was informed of this group with a lot of foreign money who wanted to join with the Moscow Patriarchate and hence the World Council of Churches. And he said that's not going to happen, so he rescinded his retirement. Everyone agrees on that. Well, he certainly had the right to do that. And in an emergency situation, you know, that's, you know, You know, canons aren't these organizational norms. That's not how it is. Canons didn't exist in underground anti-Bolshevik Russia. Canons assume a normal functioning world with differences in banking. Technicalities of whether he retired or not is totally irrelevant. He said, I will not allow this. Vitaly was very firm, very stubborn, and a tough debater. At some point, he was very elderly at the time, his main see was in Mansonville, Canada. Agents from New York City had kidnapped him from his house, most of it's on video, actually, and dragged him to a hospital, hurting him in the process. They wanted to say that Vitaly was insane. Therefore, whatever he says against this union here with the Patriarchate is should be ignored. The bizarre nature of that is it's exactly how the Soviets acted. That's how most Americans act. Someone disagrees with them, they must be unbalanced. Not just wrong, they're crazy. With the implication that, well, we don't argue with them, we put them away. Well, Vitaly, I guess, was he was almost 90 at the time, if not 90. And he went to a hospital and was given a clean bill of health. It was very, very clear. It was a doctor, Catherine Allery. I've read the report. He has some short-term memory loss, given that, you know, his age. But it said very explicitly that there's nothing wrong with him being in the position that he's in. There's no impediment to him doing what he does now. His age doesn't matter. His mental state is clear. That's how far they were willing to go to push this thing. At the time this was going on, of course, I had the I hadn't started the radio show yet, but I did have the RussJournal.com at the time. Now it's .org. And I had come out in favor of it, but strictly on political grounds. Because the Moscow Patriarchate was really a political organization, that made sense. And I had unwittingly uncovered the essence of Sergianism. The church being treated as just one secular organization among others. Even at the time, I didn't realize that. And I was torn. Because I knew theologically there is no justification for it. If for no other reason that the Moscow Patriarchate, its whole reason for existence, is the integral part of the World Council of Churches. That's why it exists. The current patriarch was educated completely in Western Europe under the auspices of the WCC. Let's read his CV. That was the whole purpose of this. So for that reason alone, Vitaly was correct. World Council of Churches is controlled by the Rothschild family, and initially started by the Rockefeller family, and has been financed by corporate America ever since. Archer Daniels Midland, Microsoft, you know, this has been the corporate foundation here. So it's part of the regime. It's not a religious organization at all. It's not meant to be. You know, it's a New World Order organization that has no doctrine and no belief. It's a liberal Masonic group. And certainly, Metropolitan Vitaly's point of view that the Communist Party, the Bolsheviks, after World War I were controlled by Western banks was not something that was going to be accepted in Geneva, Switzerland, where the WCC is headquartered. Because the WCC gets financing from some of these banks, it was a bit of a problem. And Vitaly condemned any activity within that organization. There's absolutely no reason for it. And I say now, it's my big criticism of Putin. He is gaining nothing by being a part of that group. Weston is going to like him because he's a part of the WCC. His core constituency is nationalist and orthodox. They want out of the WCC. What's he gaining? Money is not the issue. Rockefeller's hated no matter what. I don't see the issue here. The same thing goes for the church in Belarus. The same constituency. You know, Putin and Lukashenko rail against the New World Order and yet insist that their church organization be a part of one of its major arms, the religious arm, WCC. That doesn't make sense. It sticks out like a sore thumb. And Putin has to say, okay, we're getting nothing out of this. We pull out of it. Is it odd? I don't have an answer for that right now. I'm not seeing politically what they gain from it, because their constituency is against it. But Vitaly, like everybody in the church outside of Russia up until, you know, the last 20 years, was firmly aware of the Jewish question and the nature of the New World Order. They were talking about it in Russian decades ago, you know, almost 100 years ago. He saw the Soviet Union as a crude Jewish experiment to simply wipe out Orthodox Russia violently. We can't kill everybody. The Soviets were being regularly supported with grants and aid from the West and trade for its entire existence. They could wipe out millions of peasants. Well, the West is going to feed them, so what difference does it make? Russia was feeding the world under the Tsar. It was starving during a lot of the time during the Soviet era. Vitaly, of course, sees Rome as this sacred institution. Rome isn't a place, it's not a city. It's legitimate order. It's the following of natural law, understanding that natural law comes from God. That's what Rome is. It's order. And not order just in terms of organization, but order in terms of clear thinking and proper cognition. Tsar Nicholas was the last successor of St. Constantine in the world, at least on the throne. And his murder brought an end to the Constantinian epoch. After his death, as many of you know, one of the most horrifying epidemics, the worst epidemic in world history, was unleashed. And smallpox and cholera, killing tens of millions. And that really drove the belief, one that I share, that this is it. The throne of Constantine has fallen. Now demons have been loosed to wreak havoc on the world. Remember, demons torture people for its own sake. Most of the world already is controlled by them. But they still possess people. They still hurt people. They do it because they enjoy hurting people. Demons and the demonic now is an accepted normal presence. Every major rock star admits openly that they have signed a deal with demons. Go to YouTube and you look it up, and you'll find one after another saying. Bob Dylan, of course, is the most obvious, but they all openly say this. How do you not believe in demons and become Orthodox if this is the case? They're openly saying it. Yep, we signed this piece of paper with blood and all that. And they hate it. And usually their children are taken as a sacrifice. Eric Clapton's son was murdered, of course. The official explanation makes absolutely no sense. And he fell onto the Masonic Hall, the Order of Cincinnatus, which is right next to his apartment building. So his son is sacrificed. His body smashes on the ceiling of the Order of Cincinnati. I believe that's significant. So many of your rock stars have lost children. It can't be a coincidence, just so many of them. But they're saying openly that demons rule, and therefore to matter, to become important, you have to make a deal with them, or at least compromise with them. Celebrity after celebrity after celebrity says it, and still it makes no impact. It makes not a dent on people. Vitaly would go so far as to say that, you know, that the organization that Stalin created in 1944, the Patriarch of Moscow, that these people joining that organization, people who would take it seriously, are defective. They have an agenda. They shouldn't be listened to. So it's not just we shouldn't have, you know, prayer and communion with these people. We shouldn't even talk to them. There's something wrong with them. For anyone to believe that that's a church, and Vitaly says it was not even meant as a church. It was a political institution. That's all Stalin ever meant by it. And that was certainly the case at the time. As far as the business were concerned, and its income and everything else, it was a political organization. That's what it was meant to be. It's not a church. Now, it became one. You have many good institutions, people there. I know it for a fact. But that's not how it was created. Over and over again, Vitali says, bishops are not the church. Synod of bishops is not the same thing as a church. Usually, that synod is against the church. The people must accept anything. That is to say, beyond dogma. People have to accept it. People, in other words, tradition has to eventually be able to absorb it and make it a part of itself. If it doesn't, and it can't, then it is not to be taken seriously. That's how authority is. That's how authority differs from power. You don't just bang a gavel and say everything is one way. No, it's slow, because we're slow, because people are stupid and corrupt. We all are. So for law to be manifest properly, it takes a long time. If tradition doesn't accept it, if you can't make it a part of this traditional life, then it isn't true. Of course, today, we don't have that benchmark anymore. Everything we do is artificial because we are in the midst of hell here in the United States of America. Our homes should be these little islands of sanity in the midst of this chaos. And that becomes very difficult because we bring the evil of the world in with us. This is not our fault. We didn't create this system. We're fighting against it. But when he says people have to accept these things over time, and then it becomes doctrine, what he means is that the day-to-day life of the people has to be able to absorb it, and it has to be incorporated into natural law. Tradition in its true sense. However, Vitali, put it this way, he goes further. He says, because Orthodox people now have no trust for bishops in Russia, that's a very good thing. Finally, we'll get rid of this idea that because the synod says X, X is true. We're talking about non-dogmatic things, of course. He says, the bishops in Russia being exposed, and he's talking about during the Cold War, as frauds and Communist Party members, that's great. Finally, people can realize that just because you wear a certain outfit and make public pronouncements, you know, in Slavonic, doesn't mean you're a bishop. Just because there's icons everywhere and cupolas on top of you doesn't mean that you're Orthodox. Just because your name doesn't end in V or O, you can still be Russian. Like so many of that era, the death of Tsar Nicholas was a death of an era. This was a major watershed in history. And in fact, that's one of the axioms that this radio show was based on my academic career, based on the idea that the Constantine era ushered in this age of utter chaos and confusion and death. That is, they're getting worse as time goes on. But not being able to slaughter everybody, you know, it was so crude. I mean, you can't have a machine gun nest in every roof. How do you control people? The Jewish elite running the Soviet Union and a different Jewish elite under Stalin had no right to rule, and they knew that. They had no interest in labor or anything like that. They had no long-term goals. They just wanted to rape the country. So psychology was brought in. Getting people at their weaknesses. Vitali always made the point that prosperity is far worse than poverty, certainly from a moral point of view. I've known people in my life, I've known one person that never had a problem. I can't believe it. Never had a problem. Never been unemployed, never been sick, never lost anybody, never been cheated on. Never been rejected, no depression, no anxiety, never been broke, never been ill in any way whatsoever, not whatever they wanted, that what she wanted. And it created a monster. It created this entitled arrogant, but ultimately extremely superficial personality. The more desire is met, the worse it becomes. The passions are a walking contradiction. Because not only can they never be satisfied, because there's always another one coming right around the corner, but the more they're satisfied, the worse it gets. Drugs is an example, pornography is another example. You don't just want the same thing over and over again. You need different doses. It needs to get worse. One of the elements here is the intellectuals. Now he's talking about Russia at the turn of the century. The intellectuals kind of had this half-digested semi-understanding of Western doctrine. And the Westernizers looked to the West for ideological and philosophical guidance. No one denied that certain industrialization was necessary. That wasn't the issue. This is about ideology. This is about revolution. Westernizers were revolutionaries by definition. But the rule of the passions destroys reason because it destroys autonomy. Freedom means that you rule yourself. Freedom means that when you make a decision, it's based on rational thought and cognition, not some drive, like hunger or sleep or something like that. That's certainly not free. But reason, if passions do rule, becomes rationalization. And that's what the intelligentsia in Vitali's sense became around 1900. And the worst contradiction of all was that the Soviet Union not only was a creature of the West, but was dependent on the West. And Vitali is one of the few who understood this. There were some in the immigrant community who understood that the Western world created and propped up the USSR. When I say Western world, I mean it's economic elites, like General Electric and Ford Motors. And Anthony Sutton, his three-volume series has, and also the high-tech sector was built totally by the West in Russia. They're dependent on the West ideologically as well as technologically. It's very similar to the demons and Satan. Satan doesn't oppose God. He doesn't have that strength. He would love for you to believe that. He would love for you to believe that he's God's equal. But it's utter nonsense. In the book of Job, Satan has to ask permission to torture Job. Well, very similarly, Tsar Nicholas II, born on St. Job's feast day. This is about sifting the wheat. Pain isn't really pain. Western world says pain has to be avoided at all costs, and yet anything good comes with pain. Anything good has to be maintained with pain and suffering. When we study for an exam, or we work very hard to become a physician, for example, it's a lot of pain involved, a lot of discomfort involved. But we don't say this is a horrible thing, should be avoided. Pain is not the problem. It's meaningless pain. It wasn't so much that Russia was behind the West. It was the very fact that they took the West as, and Western economic elites, I should say, as a model in the first place. Prosperity is the issue. Solzhenitsyn says the same thing. The central theme in Vitali is that poverty, while not in and of itself laudable, creates better people. The person I know that's never had a problem, believe it or not, became a very superficial, ignorant person. There are some people who cannot feel physical pain. It's very rare, but it does exist. Very few live beyond 35. Because they can poison themselves and not realize it. They have to check every 5 minutes and something's sticking out of them. They don't get nauseous. Anything can happen to them. They die young. And they would kill someone to feel physical pain for once. It's not a bad thing. Now, when you're in the middle of it, you don't want to hear that. But when it's over, we realize just how good it is. Pain isn't something to be avoided. It's not a terrible thing. Only when it's meaningless is it terrible. All events in history, all events in social life have two elements. They have their empirical element and they have their noumenal element. That means everything ultimately has a metaphysical and religious side to it. When Christ came to save human nature, you know, the people at, you know, the OCA will talk about, you know, this abstraction. And that's it. Everything else is no, he wasn't really talking about the economy or the state or anything else. That's unacceptable. Yeah, that's not mainstream, therefore we can't hold it. No, he meant everything. Everything comes under the mentality of the gospel. Human nature refers to anything that human beings naturally deal with. Family, economies, states, communities in general. That's what human nature is. It does refer to this universal, of course it does. But as far as our day-to-day lives are concerned, it isn't just this universal. So many in the OCA and the AOC, certainly, they love to talk all pompously about the metaphysics that they only kind of half understand. And part of why they're doing it is to avoid dealing with how this is manifest in day-to-day life. You know, when you talk about the prophets, they get very, very upset. Oh, and by the way, just as an aside, I'm going to make a prediction here. An increasingly obnoxious heresy that you're going to see coming more and more is the denial of the Old Testament. I'm hearing it. I've heard it from several bishops over and over again. I've heard it from several priests that the Old Testament doesn't really matter and you don't listen to it anymore. That it was somehow a mistake and it should have been included in Scripture. Outside of Christ's identity and saving power, Matthew is the same as Jeremiah. One is not better than the other. They're still inspired Scripture. They still have tremendous authority. I am seeing, because in the Old Testament you have the prophets, you have nationalism, you have socialism, you have anarchism, you have the Rechabites, you have militarism, everything church is not supposed to like, you have enshrined and canonized. But it's not enough that no one reads it or understands it anymore. That's not enough. It has to be decanonized. And I'm making a prediction now that this is going to get worse and worse. You're going to start hearing more and more people saying we have to eliminate parts of the Old Testament. This isn't relevant anymore. We're in a new era. Keep the Psalms, you know, well, maybe not all of them, but keep the Psalms that are harmless. And that's really about it. You read Proverbs. Who reads Proverbs? This is an inspired scripture equal to the Gospels in its authority. Outside, of course, Christ. And Christ is present in the Old Testament anyway. But you have people who will deny that Proverbs contains extraordinary, this is how we're supposed to live. Christ couldn't say everything. Christ gave a couple of parables. He was here a very short time. Well, it's because you have, you know, hundreds of pages of scripture in the Old Testament that people had to go on. Christ simply altered a few things. He had the right to do that, being God. And the rest, he elevated. But because so many of our arguments come from, you know, nationalism is an Old Testament thing. Socialism, the economy, the prophetic world is Old Testament. And they can't deny that. They can't deny, they have to eliminate the book of Ezra. They can't explain it away. So you're going to see an increasing rejection of the Old Testament in the OCA, the new Synod Abroad, stuff like that, as the years go on. I know of two bishops now who I've confronted saying that, and one priest who passed away now. I confronted them once privately. Scripture said you have to do it again, so I'm not going to say publicly who they are. That's a particularly nasty heresy. Church fathers wrote lengthy commentaries on the prophets in the Old Testament. These things really happen. They exist in a literal world as well as a metaphorical one. It's up to the church and the saints and our own experience to make sense out of all of it. It matters just as much as the Gospel of Matthew does. That's why it's in the Bible. That's why they're equal, and the Old Testament's larger. Isn't that odd? Christ didn't say much. Christ said very little. It's because he didn't have to. And one of the things the prophets say is exactly what Vitalis said. Prosperity is not something to be pursued. The fewer problems you have, the worse off you're going to be. The person who I know, who's never had a problem before, has one now, for the first time ever. And she is falling to pieces because she has no coping skills. That sense of entitlement has her screaming I'm working on a paper on Amy Bishop, who slaughtered professors at the University of Alabama in 2010 and was shoved under the rug because it condemns academia. She is a classic example of it. Entitled, Jewish, incompetent, out of the Ivy Leagues, demanded respect just from her existence, and when she didn't get it, she killed people. The passions rule as a tyrant. The opposite of freedom is someone who simply gives in to whether it be anger, or sexuality, hunger, anything like this. And in a very broad sense, everything that hunger means, the greed, desire for possessions, reputation, all that. It comes down to women. That's why men do it. They want women to like them. They don't give a damn about buying a Lamborghini. It's for status, and status is for women. Otherwise, they wouldn't give a damn. If they were asexual, they wouldn't be buying mansions in Malibu. But this is what the passions are. It has them do psychotic things that they would never do. Take the wealthy in America and make them all asexual and see how they spend their money. You'll see no distinction. You'll see nothing but distinction between now and then. The passions, and especially the sexual passion, rules the upper classes. It can't be satisfied, and then once it is satisfied, it has to be satisfied in more and more creative ways and nasty ways in certain areas. So prosperity, the satisfaction of the passions, is worse than simply doing without. Fasting is not about food. Usury is not about interest rates. This notion of the nominalist idea that it's just these words and their dictionary definition and that's it. That's not how the ancient medievals used words. Words were icons. They were paintings. Usury refers to any rent. Extraction of resources based on non-economic consideration. Passion referred to any dominant, people who do things because they're trying to impress someone else, including satisfying their own ego. These aren't free. They aren't free choices by definition. If someone gives into that, they're the opposite of free. They're not rational. Because no one could possibly defend the use of that, or the use of money in that stupid way, that stupid end, as rational. So they're not free. And you have people joining the church because it's comfortable now. And because of that, you have large parishes with people who don't know the first thing about the faith. They have too much to lose. So it's in their interest to say something like, usury is about excessive interest rates, which is a meaningless statement. No, that's not what usury means. It's rent. Most of the American economy is based on rent. You become an Orthodox struggler. You become an Orthodox man, and the entire society has to come down. There is nothing legitimate about it. Not wanting to do that, they'll join the OCA and you know, they won't have their conscience worried about it. But I'm here to provoke that. They know they're doing the wrong thing. And rejecting the Old Testament is going to be of what they're doing. People, you know, the fact that no one reads it or even knows about it shows that the church is deliberately hiding it. Prosperity destroys. Persecution, it reveals the truth. Vitalis, great argument, and one that I make, one that so many in the Russian church, really essential to the Russian Orthodox Church in its history, is that our present evils come from the murder of Tsar Nicholas. And one of those evils is how the church is governed. Without the state, the church is useless. Church fathers said there really is no church without the state. When I say state, I'm referring to the empire. There is no such thing as a secular power. That's only recently. The empire was a religious power. The church, defined as its bishops, is an utter disaster area without some kind of external force. The passions and prosperity equal death. The less pain, the less focused, meaningful pain that you have to go through, the worse off you're going to be. Anything good in life comes from pain and discomfort. It's not a bad thing. Only when it seems to have no purpose. Use a word like subordinates with subor, or even, you know, with mistranslated as council. You're not talking about bishops all sitting in a circle. You're referring to that which already exists, the common mind, reason, without these external concerns. We can't say X about the Jews because we might get into trouble. God abandons them at that moment. That is Sergianism. Sergianism is when you make a decision based on respectability. That's exactly what Vitalius is talking about and is ruling most of the churches and certainly the Orthodox Church throughout the world. Now, the church is more than these institutions. They are communities, organisms that matter. That is actually doing quite well. There you have communities getting together all the time. But the minute you have an organization imposed on it, you get destruction. And I would say that ultimately, that's Metropolitan Vitalis' great theological contribution. And he's not known for that, and that needs to change. Anyway, I have come to the end of my hour. Metropolitan Vitali, I am a priest in a group that he founded under Metropolitan Dom Scheme, that he was a part of anyway for a while. So he's very special to many of us. He was a great man, and he spoke the truth despite the situation he found himself in and the confusion that we're still in. People can be wrong and not evil. People can be wrong and not insane. Vitali was a very, very good man who was a very elderly man, was forced to make extremely hard decisions. But Holy Russia, as always, is not just the center of his thought, it's the center of the world. Thank you. I'll talk to you next time.
You've been listening to The Orthodox Nationalist with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson at RadioArian.com.